Hey, it's Davinia here, and this season we're proudly partnering with Nosso, an awesome new app created to help parents invest for their children's futures with the support of their close family and friends. Nosso offers investment products like junior stocks and shares ISAs, as well as general investment accounts and much more. And they make gifting from family and friends super memorable with messages and photos, which means any money you gift on behalf of the children in your life has a lasting legacy. And while I've got you, a quick reminder that doors are now open for the latest cohort of the Raincheck Private Members Club, our final cohort of 2022. Link to find out more about all of the above is in the show notes. Enjoy the episode. Hi, and welcome to the Let's Make It Rain podcast. I'm your host, Davinia Tomlinson. This podcast is for the rainmakers. Those women who are breaking down walls, building their own empires, defying convention and rejecting stereotypes. Women who are unafraid to have open, honest conversations about money among friends and to share the truths we've been told to keep secret. Don't forget to subscribe, share and download wherever you usually get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, then please leave us a 5-star review. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Let's Make It Rain podcast. Today, I'm pleased to be joined by the wonderful Marielle Laguerre. Marielle is a personal branding expert, author and speaker. She's also a LinkedIn learning instructor. Marielle, thank you for being here today. Why don't you introduce yourself for the benefit of the listeners?
Hi, Dav. Thanks so much for having me on. My name is Marielle Laguerre and I wear a few hats. I'm a personal branding speaker and trainer, LinkedIn learning instructor, but I often say that my superpower is helping professionals and entrepreneurs move from unknown to a go-to expert.
I love that. Spoken like a true personal branding expert. That was a brilliant elevator pitch, Marielle. So diving straight in, how would you say your relationship with money has evolved over the course of your life?
Yeah, I love this question. And it's definitely been a journey. I'm still on that journey. But I would say, looking back, the key milestones so to date have been moving from full-time employment to becoming an entrepreneur. I definitely had to do a lot of money mindset work when I made that transition, because I feel like in a 9-to-5, I was trading my time for money. So I had a real scarcity approach to money, whereby I thought it was a limiting supply. I thought I just had to work harder to make more money. But now I definitely have a better relationship with money, because it doesn't evolve around trading my time. I just feel much more comfortable around money and have a much more abundant mindset around it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. But I think for anybody listening that is, you know, unfamiliar or unclear on the, you know, this distinction between a scarcity and an abundance mindset, I mean, how would you describe for you the kind of hallmarks of an abundance mindset as it relates to specifically to you?
Yes. Yeah, I think for me, it's definitely just recognizing that there is an endless supply of money in this world, right? And I feel like I've really had to unlearn a lot of the conditioning that I've had just due to the environment that I've grown up in, that, you know, there is a limited, like I was often told, you know, money doesn't grow on trees.
Yeah.
Where do you think that comes from? Even those little things have really kind of set me back, if you like. So I've really had to unlearn a lot of that. And I read recently that our money mindset is set by the time we're 7. So yes. Unless we do the work around unlearning these things, we likely have the mindset of a 7-year-old when it comes to managing our money and our attitudes and our behaviors around money. So, yeah, it just requires, I think, a lot of work and a lot of commitment to really realize that money is infinite. I feel like wealth is my birthright, and that's a beautiful thing.
You know? I absolutely love that. I mean, I've got so many questions just following on from that. And it's really interesting that you raise that point about, you know, some of our earliest money behaviours and habits are effectively formed by the age of seven. And, you know, when you look at, you know, I've got a 7-year-old daughter and, you know, thinking, you know, this small child who, you know, they're starting to step into and assert their own sense of independence, but they're still 7 years old and thinking that, wow, everything that they've observed up to that point, you know, and kind of absorbed almost by osmosis by being around you, seeing how you handle money, whether it's as a parent, you know, godparents, grandparents and whoever, all of the people that are around them, are already starting to shape who they will become, and reflecting on the fact that our approach to money and our relationship with money impacts so many other aspects of our lives. You know, it's a real foundational part of our learning. So it's quite significant to think, you know, if you don't invest in, or at least start to understand or unlearn some of the money behaviours that may not be serving you, that you may well be entrenched in habits and behaviours that you first learned or adopted at the age of seven. Like, that's a crazy thought. But, you know, you've talked about wealth being your birthright, which I absolutely love, because one of the things on this podcast that we are striving to do is to open up a conversation about what it means to be a wealthy woman, and also to help women kind of recognize that it's okay to say that you want to be a wealthy woman in the first place. You know, particularly in the UK, there's this massive taboo in talking about wealth. What does it mean to be a wealthy woman in your view? And what kind of steps are you taking to achieve that in your own life? And of course, wealth can mean a number of different things, right?
Yeah. And I really do see it as a lifestyle versus, yeah, very much as a way of being. So for me, it's about accumulating assets, having those assets work for me, me working a lot less as well. And really just designing a life that's on my terms, you know, being able to wake up and go and do whatever, you know. That to me is true wealth in a very, very simplistic way when I look at it like that. But in a more tactical sense, I think I've really just had to sit down and look at the way that I'm working day to day, look at kind of like the sort of work that I'm doing, and really assess, is this going to get me to where I want to go? So I've had to be really, really honest with myself and think, okay, what sort of business model do I have? Is this actually serving my highest good, right? And I realized it wasn't. I realized I had a business model up until recently that was massively out of alignment with my values and how I wanted to show up. So I had to really just let that go. And I had to create a new path for myself, which was quite scary, quite daunting, but I feel much more in alignment with the work I'm doing now, because I'm no longer following somebody else's blueprint. I'm actually kind of stepping into my true essence and doing work that is really, really aligned to how I want to live, and is going to get me to where I want to go much quicker. So to go a little deeper into that, I know I've spoken quite in general terms, but I had a very kind of traditional coaching business model, right? Even though I'm not a coach, but I was around a lot of coaches, and I found that just by default, I inherited their ways of working and their ways of making money. But it was massively out of alignment with me. So now I've stepped more boldly into the corporate arena, where I'm doing a lot of corporate workshops and keynotes. I've also recently partnered with LinkedIn Learning, which is great because it gives me much more visibility. And these are all just also great streams of income as well, if I'm really honest, as ways to, you know, reach my money goals much faster. So that's a very long way of saying I had to change things around to get to where I wanted to go.
Yeah, no, I love it. And thank you so much for sharing that in detail, because I think it helps to give people some context, you know, to what it means in your own mind. And I think just picking up on that point, and you've talked already so much in just, you know, this short few minutes that we've had during the course of this conversation so far about mindset. And I know that you are somebody that does an incredible amount of work on mindset. How important would you say this is to our success as women specifically? And when did you realize that investing in yours was going to be a real game changer? Like, was there a moment of truth for you at a certain point in your career, or even earlier than that, when you realized, gosh, this is going to be the key to everything?
Yeah, and that's such a great question. And I think for me, growing up in the UK, I didn't realize how much I'd been conditioned and programmed to be a certain way, to expect to just show up the way that I was showing up. You know, if you think about it, not that you would know, but I've grown up in a predominantly white working class areas, right? And I was often the only black girl in my class, encountered a lot of racism, a lot of prejudice in the workplace. All of those things made me feel that I wasn't enough, that I wasn't good enough. You know, I never saw myself on the TV. I would go to the supermarket, never be able to buy, you know, products for my hair. All of those things told me subconsciously that I wasn't, you know, worthy, you know, in an indirect way. So I've really had to unlearn a lot of that now. And this is where the mindset piece comes in, because I think the first part of wealth building is recognizing that you are enough, that you are worthy. You are worthy of charging your fee, or you are worthy of the salary that you're asking for. If you don't have that self-love piece unlocked, it's going to be really, really difficult for anything else, right? So I feel like that piece is foundational. And just growing up where I've grown up, I've really had to do a lot of work to really love and truly stand boldly in who I am. So I think that's the first piece. And I think also there's often a lot of fear that comes up around money and just feeling like we're worthy, you know? So I really just had to work on my confidence. Really, really had to work on my confidence. So when I now think about mindset, I think it's about those limiting beliefs that keep us stuck, and really just thinking, okay, is this story true that I'm telling myself? Is it true that there's not enough money out there, or that I can't charge my worth, or that if I speak up, I'm going to be seen as loud and obnoxious? So many limiting beliefs that really hold us back. So you know, there's not a day or a few days that go by when I don't actually have to sit down with myself and really have a very frank, honest conversation about, okay, am I playing big here, or am I holding myself back, you know? So yeah, I would say in a nutshell, it's very much just a part of my being. I don't see mindset as separate as myself, of myself, because I feel like without doing that work, I wouldn't be able to show up as powerfully as I do to really serve the women that I work with. And I'm a huge believer that we can't preach what we don't practice, right? So I would be out of alignment if I was talking about the importance of, you know, showing up and being confident and, you know, in the field that I'm in, if I wasn't doing that work myself, because I realize it is scary. I realize that it's never comfortable. Growth is never comfortable, but I see no other option, right? I often say, one of my favorite quotes is from Brené Brown, you know, and she says, we can have courage or comfort, but not both at the same time. And to me, this is the work. This is the work I feel like we all must do.
Yeah, I absolutely love that, Marielle. And you know, one of the things for me that I've always loved about, you know, your presence, you know, from a professional perspective, is your ability to weave in really powerful stories and anecdotes and learnings from your own experiences that have shaped you. Because I think one of the most frightening things for women who are thinking about how they can build their own personal brand, or even if they're not thinking about it in those terms, just be more visible, whether it be in the workplace or whether it be, you know, in trying to pitch for new work, you know, from a business perspective, is thinking, gosh, you know, do I need to be out there and tell everybody my whole life story in a real kind of X Factor style way? It was one of the fears that I had, you know, in launching Raincheck, when I was thinking about, you know, well, I want to try and get some PR, I want to try and get some media coverage. But are they going to be looking for me to tell them some terrible story of oppression? Because I don't have a particularly oppressive story to tell. But there are certain, certainly, you know, thinking about financial inclusion for women and trying to get more women to invest and trying to be more visible as a senior Black woman that works in the finance and investment world, I recognize that already my being is almost unicorn-like in lots of respects. And so there is a story to tell there, and that I should feel confident in telling it without holding myself back. I think for the women that you work with, there are probably a number of, you know, it's as you said earlier on, there are lots of things we have to unlearn. How do you get them to unlearn that? You know, again, just playing back on, playing back to this, the work that you do on mindset. And then I guess, you know, my follow-on question is, why is it so important in the first place? You know, what are some of the hallmarks of a successful personal brand?
Yeah, great question. I think to answer your first point, we have to remember that people remember things in stories, right? Like that's how people connect. People connect first on emotion over logic. So even if we think about Raincheck, yes, we could tell people all day long that they need to invest and they need to save and all of those things that they need to do. But if you add a story to it, if you add the emotion to it, the feeling behind it, that's what's going to resonate with people. And it's the same with personal branding as well. And I think for those people that are nervous, I totally get it. Like I'm super introverted, you know, like I am, you know, a lot of people always are, no, you're not, but I really am. And I realize that it takes a lot. It does take a lot for me still even now to show up. But I had to realize that it's not about you. It's not about me. It's really about your message. And I think the challenge that we all face now is that it's so noisy out there. So how do you cut through the noise? How do you connect with people on a deeper level so that your business message is heard and so that it resonates? That is through story. And that is what personal branding is about. It's about you helping connect with your audience on a deeper level so that they feel something, so that they're compelled to act in some sort of way. So I think that's something that we all need to really master. You know, in the workplace, we're always telling stories to be able to influence stakeholders, to share our ideas. As business owners, we need to be telling stories to get clients and help people buy into us. So if we see it like that, if we take back the layers and the labels and just see it more as a way of connecting with people, I think it just becomes so much easier.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess specifically when you start to think about who is your audience. So for me, you know, thinking, well, who are the rainmakers? And reflecting on the fact that not every woman either wants to be a rainmaker or would fit the profile for a rainmaker. You know, there are so many women in the world and there's so many women in the UK that, you know, the expectation that every woman would want necessarily to be a Raincheck customer or be part of the community would be completely unrealistic. But I think as soon as you connect with people that, you know, recognize what it is you're trying to do, with whom your story resonates, and they're like, oh my gosh, like that's so relatable, it's so familiar to me, I've been experiencing similar things, then suddenly the conversation becomes much easier. But I just want to pick up on something that you've said there, and you've kind of answered it in part, but I'd really like to explore it a bit more, because you've talked extensively in the past about asserting yourself as an introvert. And it's really funny that you say, and I've heard this from other introverted friends who say, you know, people think that I'm way more extroverted than I am purely because they see me out there doing things and being visible, but they have no idea what it takes for me to do those things. And I think in your case, you know, what's quite interesting is that because you are effectively teaching women how to show up more for themselves, how to be more visible, how to make sure that the value that they intrinsically have is obvious and is clear for everyone to see. I think it's such a powerful message, because I think people just assume it's easy and it's natural for extroverts to be out there hyping themselves, and perhaps less so for introverts. So I mean, can you share with us a bit more about that journey? And I guess specifically with regard to your transition from the corporate world to life as an entrepreneur, and any practical tips you have for any introverts listening who might be worried about being drowned out by the noise, as you say, and those louder voices. I mean, you've touched on, you know, storytelling, but are there any other more specific kind of practical hacks that you have for introverts to help them succeed?
Yes, this is a such a great question. I actually have a ritual that I kind of do whenever I've got like a big talk or anything coming up. And I think it's about intention more than anything else. So anytime I deliver a big keynote, I think about the audience, right? And I have to really, really focus on who needs to hear my message. And I think the moment as introverts, we shift the focus from ourselves, because I think, you know, I was very guilty of staying too far in my own head. And that really inhibits us from showing up. If we're staying too much in our own head, our own thoughts, that's going to stop you, right? So I think the first thing is to think about, okay, who needs to hear what I have to say? What is my intention for this? And to give you a very real example, when I was filming, about to film my big LinkedIn learning course, I stuck some post-it notes on the wall and I thought about, how do I want my audience to receive me? And I had words like empowered, supportive, inspirational, you know, just to really, really channel how I wanted to show up. And I thought, you know, in terms of the delivery of the talk that I was given through to teach the course, if I could just stick to these core things, to empower them, to inspire them, to let them feel that they could really do what I'm here to teach, then my job is done. And I think we really have to almost step outside ourselves. It's almost like you take on a... I'm not saying that you need to become super introverted, because I don't really believe in that either. But I just feel that if we could just shift our focus from ourselves to really just, who am I here to serve? I think that's such a powerful way to show up. So that's the first thing, like set an intention and think about, you know, how do I want people to feel when I show up? And another thing that's really helped me is just to practice. You know, going to Toastmasters was really invaluable to me, because it took me so far out of my comfort zone. I really just had to learn to think on the spot, to communicate my ideas really quickly. And these are things that we can all learn. You know, it's not a skill, it's a talent. Like it's something that we can all... I'm trying to think of what that saying is. It's not a skill, it's a talent, or I can't remember.
Yes,
it, but
I know what you mean, that it's not something that you're necessarily born with, like you can learn it.
Yes, exactly. It's something that you could refine and improve on.
Yeah.
If you're committed, you absolutely can. So I think that's really important as well, because, you know, I think back to when I was in corporate, and the worst thing, like I would dread any kind of public speaking at all. I would try to do everything to avoid it. And I was around a lot of people that would be the same, you know, like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to go up there. I'm not going to speak. I'm not going to, you know, but when you practice, when you commit and tell yourself, actually, let me just practice, because it's like a muscle. You know, you and I were talking before about, you know, I know that you do yoga most mornings. And for me, I like to run, but you get rusty, right? If you don't.
Yeah. Quick. If you don't. Especially sit on after the mat. 40.
Yeah. So rusty. So I think it's just about that commitment to actually, I'm just going to try to improve just 1% every day, just show up. And, you know, that's all we could do is try, you know?
I love that. I love the idea of just show up. And, you know, I have this, so I've adopted a few different practices recently just to maintain that consistency. I mean, for me, moving is something that I have to do. It's not a thing that I, you know, that is a nice to have or something that is now trending. So therefore, you know, I've jumped on the bandwagon. I've been like this since I was a teenager, because I have too much excess energy. So I can't sleep if I haven't worked it off in some way. I think the thing for me is that even when I'm tired, And even when, you know, if I've had a bad day, and I know myself, so I'll do my comfort eating and I'll be like, okay, well, what am I going to eat? What am I going to drink? Like, these are the things that are going to make me feel good temporarily. And I don't bash myself for it because I know that this is fleeting, but I have to do what I've got to do to get over it. Even in those instances, I will still get on my mat because I know that the benefit to me, even in just clearing my mind for 5 minutes or slowing down my breathing or whatever it is, connecting with myself for a very short amount of time has a disproportionate impact on the rest of my well-being. And because I'm now committed to that and I know the impact of it, I will not miss a session with my mat every single day, pretty much every single day.
I love that.
And, you know, and it doesn't happen, you know, for different people, it's different things. For some people, it might be journaling, but whatever it is, like making sure that there is something that you are sticking with and recognizing that I'm doing this for myself and I'm showing up for myself. And I think as women, particularly with all of the challenges that we have and the demands on our time, whether it's our parents, other family members, children, we start to do this thing where we become martyrs. And we think that we're doing it for the greater good. We think that, you know, maybe that, I don't know, maybe a divine being is going to judge us more favorably because we are being martyrs. But actually, I feel like it does us, we do ourselves a disservice by not showing up for ourselves, whether it's, as you say, in a professional capacity and building our personal brand and being more visible, or just even in some of the smaller habits that we might be looking to cultivate.
Yes, absolutely. So, I think it's foundational, that well-being.
Definitely.
Piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, really just kind of flipping this story on its head and thinking, okay, these are some of the ways that you can start to take those steps towards building your personal brand, being more visible, showing up for yourself.
Yes.
I guess based on your work, your extensive work with professional women, are there any common truths? And you've touched on some of them, you know, when you, from your experience in saying, you know, gosh, I really don't want to go and do any public speaking. I don't want to speak up in that meeting or do that presentation. What are some of the stories you've heard from women that we might be telling ourselves commonly? I mean, we do this exercise as part of the private members club where, you know, I'll share some common objections and then some approaches as to how you might, you know, handle some of these objections. But what kinds of things do you hear in terms of what we're saying to ourselves about why we can't show up?
Oh, so many. common ones would be around, I don't have time. I don't have anything to say. Who will listen to me? I don't have a story to tell. My old boss will see me. There's just so many. My old boss will see me. I don't know how to tell my story. I'm nervous. Yeah, there's just a lot.
Yeah.
And what I encourage people to do is flip the switch. Like, literally imagine that there's a light bulb in your head and you're flipping the switch. So that's a negative. What's the positive of that? It could be something like, I will make time. I will carve out just, 30 minutes first thing in the morning. I'll go to bed earlier so that I feel like I'm rested, or, you know, those sorts of things. Like, everyone starts somewhere, we have to remember.
Yes.
And I really believe that everyone is here to make an impact in some sort of way. I feel it's our duty. It's almost like buried treasure within us. We almost have to, our journey is to find that treasure and uncover that, you know?
Yeah. Isn't it interesting? I mean, this is less a question and more an observation based on what you've just said. And it's so on point, but this idea that people are watching us, that we become fixated on people watching us. And I have it too. Like, I you can become obsessed. Oh gosh, I can't do that because everyone's going to be looking at me. I used to have it, you know, particularly when I was a teenager, but I have to say into my 20s as well. When I moved down to London, I had this feeling that everyone was looking at me. In London, of all places, no one cares. Like, no one could give a crap at all. You know, everybody's focused on themselves or other, you know, if they're people watching in general, they're kind of scanning the crowd of thousands. Like, London is such a vast city. And the idea that of all the people in the city that they were watching me, as soon as I told myself the story in that way, it was so ridiculous that all I could do is laugh, because it was like, why would anybody be specifically watching you, Dav, when you leave the house? And then I just, you know, and then just kind of extending that into a work context and saying, yes, it might feel a bit like, you know, you're under scrutiny, or if you do something and then post it on LinkedIn, people will go, what's she doing that for? Or who does she think she is? But then it's incumbent upon each of us to remind ourselves who we are and to be saying, well, this is who I am, actually. And I stand by that, you know, that version of myself.
Yes. And that really comes with practice, I think. I think the more that we exercise our, you know, that muscle of not, you know, nobody is watching us to begin with. People are more concerned with what am I going to have for dinner, or what am I doing this weekend? Like, we have to remember that people are self-absorbed. Like, yes. And it's not even necessarily a bad thing, but everybody's focused on their own lane. And I think that we have to as well. But I think it just becomes so liberating when we just don't care what other people think. But it's taken me a long time, I will admit, you know, it's not been an overnight journey. I was sharing with you earlier that I'm about to just be much more bolder in terms of my messaging and just really calling out things that I think are wrong with the industry that I'm in. And I'm ready to do that now. This time last year, I wouldn't have been ready, you know.
Yes.
For a number of reasons, I would have been too concerned with what people would think. I would have been too emotive as well, because it's something that I'm really passionate about. And I think to really articulate my points clearly, I can't be emotive about it. So I think, you know, the timing of things has to be, you have to feel comfortable with the timing, but I think you'll only ever get there through practice, because no one is their most authentic, genuine self overnight. I think we have to just commit to working to that point.
Yeah, I completely agree. I love all of that. So just taking a step back then and thinking about the money again, what would you say has been your best financial investment so far? And what has been your worst, if you have one?
Yeah, this is a great question, and I love it. I would definitely say my house, house that I'm in. I love the location of it. It's something that I own outright. So that's definitely a big, you know, something that I'm blessed to have. Another one in terms of experiences would be not moving to Brazil, but quitting my job and going traveling around Brazil, back in 2010. This was at a time when a lot of people told me, you know, black people don't travel by themselves. What are you doing? Who do you think you are? But that was such a pivotal time for me to go there, you know, alone, to Rio, to Salvador. And it was almost like a journey of self-discovery. Because at the time I had a quarter life crisis where I was like, what am I doing? Who am I? You know, all of those questions were asking themselves. And that, you know, I booked a one-way ticket and I was off. So that was a huge journey of growth for me, and I never looked back. 2 years after that, I relocated to New York by myself, and I really just built my confidence by just taking the leap and doing that. I know that that probably isn't a traditional best financial investment, but I would say it really just laid the foundation of so yeah, that Brazil trip for sure. My worst, you know, I'm not really a big spender, to be honest. So I don't really splurge. Actually, I did splurge the other day on something that, let me just be honest, since we're about to end. I was out with my coach earlier this week, and she was like to me, just go and treat yourself, Marielle, because she knows that I'm not somebody that treats myself often. I work really hard, but I'm not somebody that like splurges that much. And so I went to Selfridges and I bought this really incredible perfume. It just smells, it smells like money. It smells like abundance. I cannot tell you. Literally, as soon as I smelled this, I was like, okay, I need this. This is it. And it was quite a bit of money, but I know that I feel amazing every time I wear that.
Yes.
So yeah, that's, I wouldn't say that was the worst, because I feel good, but it was very, very, He was very impulsive. I really don't know what my worst investment was, to be honest. Maybe like some black leather knee-high boots that I had that were like £120, but I never ever wear them. They're just they're like literally in my wardrobe right now. And I looked at them the other day and I was like, I've had these for years, but I don't know what I'm going to do with them, because do I throw them out?
I think you need to donate them or sell them.
Yeah.
You need to put them on Vinted or whatever.
Yeah, I think I do. But yeah, I don't really. Sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, the energy of that purchase that you're like, oh, why did I buy these? I'm never going to wear them. You don't need that. You don't need that in your beautiful space. So, yeah,
you're
put them on Vinted.
I need to let them go. this is the thing. I'm actually quite grateful that I don't really have worst, I don't look back and think, oh my gosh. But if anything, it probably is just clothes that I just need to sell. So yeah,
that's all. I love that. I love the kind of the contrast between obviously a very practical investment in an asset, your home, which is wonderful, but also the recognition that that one-way ticket to Brazil, how it opened up your horizons for everything else that you went on to do. And it's why, for me, particularly as a parent, an investment in experiences, particularly while, while my girls are young and I make, they're sponges, I want them to be exposed to different cultures and to be completely comfortable in a variety of different environments, because it will set them in such good stead for when they are adults. And so for me, whilst, yes, I am doing all of the traditional kind of the practical things around financial planning for them, so they've got a good foundation for when they're older, I'm also acutely aware of the fact that the best investment that I can give them may not just be their junior ISA. It's also, thinking about what am I exposing them to and what experiences are they having? So yeah, brilliant example. Yes. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant.
The other thing that strikes me is that, you're quite a pioneer in lots of respects, because I think whilst I would never suggest that you were the first black woman ever to travel solo around Brazil or Latin America, certainly, I mean, now when you go on social media and even in 2010, Instagram, I mean, yes, these various platforms were around, but they certainly didn't have the stranglehold on us that they do now. Mm-hmm. And I think when you go on there now and you put type in, I don't know, hashtag black girl who travels or whatever, there are so many different organizations that are promoting female solo travel and highlighting the areas that are particularly safe for black women to go to alone and just women in general. Even that kind of pioneering spirit that you have, that kind of audacity to be like, well, I don't need to hold myself back. This is what I want to do because it suits where I am in my life right now, and not being bowed by other people's expectations of what you should and shouldn't be doing, I think is really interesting. Yes. And I think almost it's kind of the cornerstone of who you are, isn't it? In terms of the rest, everything else that you've done and that playbook that you've established for your life.
Yes, and thank you. I really appreciate you saying that and acknowledging that. But it's been a journey. I always say it really, really has been a journey. And I think back to, I think it was Steve Jobs who said, you can only connect the dots looking backwards. Mm. I was petrified to quit my job. And even though I didn't enjoy the job, I was still scared to let it go and then just book a one-way ticket to Brazil where I didn't mm-hmm. know anyone.
Yeah.
I remember having a meltdown in the toilet when I got there, like, what have I done? All of those things make us stronger,
Yeah, they do.
I'm always in situations where I'm like, why am I doing this? But it's growth. It's actually exhilarating as well. It's fun. And I think, my dad often would say that I've got a real warrior spirit to me. I probably was a warrior.
Yeah, you do.
In a former life, because I'm ready to charge.
I love it. I love Marielle the Warrior. I feel like that could be the title of this episode.
That's a nice movie.
So, thinking about financial freedom, and you've kind of touched on this in one way, with regard to your investment in your home. But of course, it means different things to different people. And for some of us, it means being debt free. For others, it's never having to work again. What does it mean to you? And what would you say is the most powerful money move you've made on your financial journey to kind of move you into the realm of financial freedom? You may have answered this in a different way before, but I mean, what would you say?
Yeah, I love that question. And you know, and I'll just go a little deeper. I think one thing that really helped me was to design my ideal day. Like, I think that's such a powerful exercise to think about, you know, where do you want to be waking up? What do you want to be doing 10 till 11 most days? And really getting really granular about what that looks like. Mm-hmm. And then reverse engineering the steps to get that life. And I think that's such a beautiful, that for me was such a freeing and fun thing to do, because I realized at the time that I wasn't living, I wasn't living my ideal day,
yeah.
You know? So I was like, okay, so I need to make some changes here. You know, at the time when I did it, the first did that exercise, I was living in New York, very noisy city, so much, really overstimulated. And that's when I decided that I had to leave New York and be in a base where my overheads weren't as high, where I could really begin to kind of save and invest a lot more. So that was the first thing, getting clear on what my ideal day would look like. And then thinking about, okay, how am I going to make the money that I need to live this life? You know, because I don't believe that we're here to just work and then die. You know, I want to experience things. I want to feel into life, you know, joy. I want to feel joy every day. I think that's really important. So then I raised my prices. You know, I decided that I wasn't going to work with, I don't say I wasn't going to work with, but I decided that I was going to step into a pool of people that could afford my prices, right? So I had to just play a different game. I had to position myself differently. And I really had to own my worth. And not, you know, if people would want to nickel and dime me, that was okay. They just weren't my people. And just be okay with that. So I think it's a level of being unapologetic about the life design that you want to live.
Yes, definitely. I love that. And of course, for any of the Rainmakers listening, they'll know, they've heard me talking at length, they're probably sick of it now, about this idea of being unapologetic about who it is that you are and what it is that you want to do, the lifestyle that you want to have. Because I think for too long, as women especially, we have been dictated to around what we should be doing, what we should be doing, what we should have achieved by a certain stage in life, the yes. family structure that we should be in, all of these different things that are bound by age. And actually, we really need to reinvent ourselves and reimagine, well, do I actually want that? Because if you do, then that's absolutely fine and that's beautiful. But if you're like, well, actually, it doesn't even serve me, I don't want to do this, but I feel that I have to, I feel under pressure, that's, you know, a great opportunity to start rethinking it. And whichever category you fall into, designing your day is just a really nice, gentle way to approach it. And working back from that point to kind of, you know, put together this jigsaw in a way that makes sense for you. So brilliant. Thank you for sharing.
Yes. Because I think it's so easy to live somebody else's life without even realizing it.
Yes.
You know? We're conditioned to just kind of go with the flow, go with the tide, you know. And I think it takes real strength to say, actually, that's not the life I want. I mean, you know, because you did it, right?
Yeah.
This isn't how my story is going to go. So actually, I'm going to create a new one over here.
Yeah. My family know me now. I think I don't even think they bother trying to twist me any which way, because I'm I've adopted my dad's very headstrong qualities, so they already know me, they don't bother. So so when we think about investing, and we talk about this all the time at Raincheck, I always say that we are each of us our biggest investment by far. What would you say has been your biggest investment in yourself, and how has it transformed you?
Ooh, yeah, great question.
Or one of the biggest, because you've done so many different things.
Yes, definitely working. I always have a coach. I always invest a lot in coaches to help me kind of hold me accountable and hold a mirror to me. Because, you know, sometimes it's really, really hard to see our own blind spots. So I'm always going to invest in someone who could kind of just guide me and light the way for me as I take the steps. I've got two coaches at the moment. One is helping me with like deep subconscious work, and the other is helping me with sales, like on LinkedIn. So two very, very different things, but they actually go really closely together when you look at it. So yeah, definitely my personal development, but then also just my well-being. You know, I have a morning ritual that I follow loosely. I'm not somebody that likes to have a really structured, rigid routine, but mm-hmm. I do think it's important to, you know, start my day with intention. So I always have hot water lime to get my, to rehydrate from, you know, the fluids that I would have lost overnight, to just, you know, start the day, kickstart my digestion. I always move in some sort of way, whether that's going out for a run, working on jumping up and down on my rebounder or my spin bike. There's so many different things that I like to do. And then I try to read and just reflect each morning. So that time for me is really, really precious, because I found when I don't have that time, I'm not firing all cylinders. So, you know, even if you're not at a stage where you're able to invest in a coach one-to-one, I feel that it's really important just to carve out time for yourself, just to reflect on, you know, am I happy? What am I doing right now? How was my week? How am I feeling? Those sorts of questions, I think, are really, really important, because, you know, as we've mentioned, it's so easy just to coast, and you know, you wake up and you're 40 and you're like, sugar, what have I done with my life? Yeah. Whose life am I living? You know, whose life is this? Definitely. You know,
40 is a real moment of truth, and I think it's less, exactly as you say, it's less about the acquisition of assets at that point, although of course that might be one of the metrics that you're looking at. But I think it's more about how you feel about the direction that your life is taking. Yes. And has taken to date. You know, it's an opportunity to say, okay, I'm at a really good point now from an age perspective, you know, really flip some of those old stories on their head and say, I'm at a really good point in my life from which to see everything that I've done. And I've got a good amount of data to base these decisions on. And to use that data to inform where I want to go to next. And it may not be down the path that I thought it was going to be, and that's okay. So yeah, like, you know, rather than getting into a real panic, like we all do, when you hit 30, you go into a panic. And then certainly when you hit 40, you go into a panic. And it's just kind of pausing and going, okay, well, let me use the data. That's all we're trying to do. We're trying to look for clues in our behaviors, the things that sparked joy. You know, if you were to look at a heat map of your life and say, where was the point where it was looking really good, where it got really hot, it was red and it was beautiful yellow and all of these vibrant colours, where my energy was on a high, I felt really good. And where is it like kind of bilgy looking, sewagey, green, brown, awful, you know? And how can I avoid those? How can I avoid the sewage and make sure that I'm yes. truly, you know, soaking up all of the wonderful tropical rays? I'm speaking very personally now, so I always find a way to weave in something tropical.
Yeah, I love it.
Okay, so just in closing then, of course, this is a podcast about making it rain. And there are a number of different ways that as women we can make it rain in our own lives. But for you, Marielle, how can you share with us some of the ways, or one of the ways, that you feel you've made it rain in your life today and sparked truly transformational change? And why are you particularly proud of this moment?
Ooh, what a question. Just being...
I know it's a big one.
Yes, but yeah, for sure, just being unapologetic myself, speaking my truth in a world that teaches me as a Black woman that I don't have a voice, that I shouldn't be speaking up. I go against that, and I will always own who I am. And I think that's such a powerful thing.
It really is. And it's a really brilliant way to end this interview before we get onto our quick fire questions. So I'm going to select three at random, as ever. So the first one is, money is no object. What are you blowing the budget on?
Ooh, what am I blowing the budget on?
This is going to be hard for you since you say you're not a big spender.
Yeah, this is the thing. I'll probably upgrade my house and I'll have like a chef.
Oh, okay, like, yes. Oh, that's brilliant.
Like, yeah, maybe like a mansion overlooking the hills or the sea with like a chef, and just help. Just
yeah,
house
oh my
help.
God, help.
Which
more help.
Should come with the territory, right?
Agreed. Oh my gosh, like I'm now fantasizing about the help. Yes, yes to all the help.
Yeah.
Finish this sentence. Anyone that knows me would be surprised that secretly I am
an introvert who likes to have my own space and who's very sensitive to other people. Like, I read people really well. So I think that's part of the reason I'm so introverted.
Okay. Yeah. And then the final question, the book, podcast, or discovery that changed my life is?
The book for sure. Oh, I've got so many books, but I would say I love The Alchemist. Like, I read that at a time when I was, going through like deep transitions and really finding myself. I also love The Secrets of the Millionaire Mind by T. Harv Eker. That's a really powerful book about the mindset that separates the wealthy from, you know, the not so wealthy. Mm-hmm. 5 a.m. Club book as well. I love Robin Sharma. I love his principles. He's an incredible leadership coach. And it really helped me think about how I use my time and how I would often tell myself I don't have time when really I just realized I needed to use my time more efficiently. And in that book as well, there's so many concepts around like something called type bubble of focus. And he says, you know, all billionaires and really super wealthy people have tight bubbles of focus. You know, they guard their time because they see it as their most precious asset. They don't fritter their time away. And it really just got me thinking about how I need to be more resourceful and mindful of how I'm using my time. So there are some of my favourites.
I love that. And you know what? I'm actually going to revisit the 5 a.m. club because I'd be been completely put off because I'd started to get like overwhelmed by everyone. And it started to become a competition. It seemed on social media with people going, I get up at 5. Oh, I get up at 4:30. Oh, I get up at 3. And I'm like, oh, for God's sake, guess what? I get up at 6 or 6:30. And I feel really good on that. Yeah. But yeah, but given that, you know, some of the principles that you've outlined, I should probably give it
so
a chance.
Many. Oh, yeah, sure. And another framework that he has is something called Move, Reflect and Grow. So every morning, and it's just 20 minutes, you know, he says you could just do these things for 20 minutes. So move your body. Like, I went for a run it was more of a walk, to be honest, but I did try to get my ass out this morning for 20 minutes, right? We can all spend 20 minutes.
Definitely.
And then reflect is to reflect on your goals, your big vision, and really feel into that. And then to grow, he talks about, you know, grow your mind. So whether that's reading or listening to a podcast, something that's really going to elevate your mind. And I think those things together are really, really powerful just to do those first thing in the morning. There's so many nuggets that I took from that book.
Brilliant. Well, Marielle, thank you so much for your time today. Where can people find you, connect with you, find out more?
Yeah, so I'm very active on LinkedIn. So it's just Marielle Leguerre on LinkedIn, and Instagram as well is Marielle Leguerre. All of my social media platforms are actually Marielle Leguerre, and that's also my website as well, marielleleguerre.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you again and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been really fun. Thank you.
Hi everyone, Davinia here. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. If any of what you heard resonated and you'd like to find out more about how Raincheck is helping women all over the world build sustainable long-term wealth, then visit our website at raincheck.com and join the mailing list for more commentary, tips and opinion on how you can start taking steps to leveling up your financial well-being today. You can follow us on social media at Raincheck, and don't forget to share, like, rate, review and subscribe. See you next time.